Underoos. The underwear that's fun to wear. Back in the 80s, these were the thing to have. Nothing would have given me more nerd cred than having Batman on my butt. By the time I discovered underoos, my body had joined the ranks of the Husky Boys, and there was another problem. The forces of fate, or my parents, weren't ready for me to be a nerd. I was in kindergarten when a classmate asked me to play turtles with him at recess. My first thought was, reptiles are great toys. I was surprised when he pulled out four dark green action figures with weird wide-tooth grins. There's Raphael, Leonardo, Donatello, he said. Oh, and this one's Michelangelo. They call him Mikey. He held up an orange-masked sewer-surfing turtle with nunchucks. From then on, when we played turtles, I, and I alone, was Michelangelo. It was like Ninja Turtles were made just for me. Every day after school, I'd hurry home and turn on the TV to watch the crime-fighting turtles and their sensei, Master Splinter, the giant rat that trained them in the art of ninjutsu. That Christmas and birthday, which luckily for me occurred sequentially, I unwrapped Mikey-themed flannel sheets and a sleeping bag for a little turtle power on the go. The cherry on top, though, was a plastic turtle tote with a custom-painted wood lid that said, "Cowabunga, Michael!" Inside was my first ever Michelangelo action figure, a Ninja Turtle t-shirt, and a plushie Mikey for bedtime. All thoughts of Batman underoos fled my mind. But then, someone at church told my parents that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were evil. All the Eastern mysticism and gasp efforts to save the world were problematic, to say the least. After all, Jesus was the only one with superpowers, and only he could save the world, not cartoon turtles. I got away with watching a few more episodes until my cousin came over to our house one afternoon. It was cartoon time, and I suggested watching TMNT. She suggested that she couldn't because it was demonic. As a professional middle child, I went into crisis management mode and quickly suggested she could watch Sesame Street on the old black and white TV upstairs. Dad overheard us. He quickly pulled me aside, called me a butthead, and sent me to my room. Shredder himself might have won that day because my fanboy flames turned into turtle soup. After Turtlegate, my parents let me keep the toys but cracked down on what I could watch on TV. When Captain Planet burst on the scene, my mom took one look at those Planeteer's five glowing rings and turned the channel. Anything resembling crystals was a dog whistle for New Age indoctrination. These superheroes fought ecological villains, but my mom was more worried about my precious soul than our polluted planet. Stepping into nerddom in the 90s looked bleak, but then, in 1992, Batman the Animated Series swooped in to save me. It came out after the success of the live-action movies. I couldn't go to those because they were too scary, but this new Batman was cool and, oddly enough, cool with my parents too. Suddenly, I was on a powered runway to nerdvana. I could watch the Saturday morning cartoon, but the comics. Oy, the comics were the real gateway drug. The whole world of stories was just beyond my reach. We go to Pomida, and I'd quietly disappear behind the racks and read all the Batman comics I could before Mom found me. She would never let me buy them. The comics were too dark and sinister. Well, have you seen Batman's wardrobe? He's not exactly fond of fun floral prints. When my mom and my sisters would go to the salon, I'd sneak over to the comic book store and just stare in awe. One time, my mom came to get me, and wouldn't you know it, but there was a big old anime poster on the wall with a girl wearing nothing but lightning bolts. My mom was none too happy to see this blatantly busty cartoon character. My own camp sensibilities must have started because I thought it was funny as heck. I didn't know how to tell my parents that I was more interested in what Batman and Robin got into than Wonder Woman's boobs. In fact, I only bought boy action figures until I found a Catwoman figure at a thrift store. Her 90s era outfit can only be described as purple and naked. Dad threatened to sand down her breasts. My little sister was tasked to keep Catwoman in her room. As I entered my teens, I soon realized the other boys were checking out girls instead of afternoon cartoons. But was I still buying action figures? Yes. Did my mom make me a set of Batman pajamas in junior high? Maybe. My older sister would use this against me. One time on the bus, I annoyed her so much that she told the jerky kid about my secret Batman jammies. Just as he was working up his worst insults, I went into crisis management mode again and discreetly dusted my sister's hair with cracker crumbs. "Look, Drew," I said, "Laura has head lice." Nerdery was one thing, but if you were caught with lice, you might as well have been struck with leprosy. After I'd been outed for my love of Batman, I shoved my long gray underwear into the back of my closet and tried to be cool. American Eagle brought me so much more social cachet than my action figures ever could. Sure, my eyes would wander when a new Batman movie would come out, but I tried my best to stay on the straight and narrow. As fate would have it, all those who tried could only keep me from being a nerd for so long. After college, I finally had the time, the freedom, and the disposable income to invest in things I liked. My wardrobe went from preppy polos to Batman tees. I have collectibles all over my house, including a 3-foot-long Batplane. And it's not pajamas, but my husband did find me a bat apron. My crowning achievement is amassing around 1,500 comic books in over 7 years. At last, nerdery is mine, and I'll never let go. Oh, and when I did rescue my action figures from my parents' house, I made sure I saved Catwoman and her breasts. It was the right thing to do.
Mike Gall shared his story at Oats Life Storytelling event last month. The theme was belonging. Join us on Wednesdays to hear more. Next week,
we walked into an all-night party, all male, all white, all hate, in celebration of the death of Dr. King in a mass of blood on a motel balcony.
Ode is a storytelling series where community members tell true stories on stage to promote positive impact through empathy. The next live show is Friday, July 27 at the Marquee in downtown Sioux City. The theme is Lessons Learned. Support for Siouxland Public Media and Ode comes from Siouxland Woman Magazine, celebrating women, supporting diversity, and supporting the Siouxland Tri-State area. For more information about Siouxland Woman Magazine, visit their website at siouxlandwoman.com. The music is by Sean Blomberg, played live at Ode last year. For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Allie Carson.
When there's nothing left to lose, I can fly right if I choose. You can buy, but you can't wear my shoes. Cause I've got nothing left to lose. So I'm heading home to lick my wounds. Share with my family the news. I put some miles on these here shoes. I've got nothing left to lose. So hop the midnight train down the coast. Well, I was still wrestling with your ghost. And I caught me a bad case of the blues. I had nothing left to lose. Spinning circles in the sand. And down came a guiding hand. To show me the way I was confused. Thank you. when I had nothing left to lose. When there's nothing left to lose. Well, you could fly right if you choose. Shame on me and shame on you. When there's nothing left to lose.